tonight on Arena. A thought-provoking new production of Lady Gregory's The Rising of the Moon at Beauties and Drive Away Dolls, The New Boy and Monster are the movies up for review. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena, and you can watch proceedings indeed as well on the live stream, rte.ie/arena. Bold Moves is a contemporary dance series in partnership with Ballet Ireland. The bill will feature two pieces by internationally renowned choreographers Johan Inger and Felipe Portugal. It has been described as heart-pounding, gravity-defying performances meeting artistic elegance. Bold Moves was to consist of three pieces, but Ballet Ireland withdrew -16, work by the Israeli choreographer Ohad Nachrin. More about that anon. Bold Moves will be taking place in the O'Reilly Theatre in Belvedere College in Dublin from March the 22nd through until March the 30th. With me in studio this evening, Dominic Harrison, one of the performers in the series, and Anne Marr, the artistic director and CEO of Ballet Ireland. We just start with that decision around -16. What happened, Anne, that you decided not to put on this piece?
Sean, we've been, I guess, experiencing relentless pressure for nearly a month now. And we met with people, we had conversations. Ultimately, there was such an amount of pressure being brought to bear on us. And sadly, also, I felt that our artists were also being contacted individually. And yeah, I felt I had no choice. But
where was the pressure coming from, Anne?
Sadly, it's coming from within our own arts community primarily, and then also from some support Palestinian support groups, you know, and none of us support what was happening in Gaza. It's an absolutely atrocious situation. However, I felt that in order to look after the health and safety of my team and the artists within the company, that I was presented with no choice.
How political a piece is -16?
Ultimately, there is not a political note within it. It is a fabulous piece of inclusive dance. There is one section, Ehihad, which is a lullaby, a children's lullaby, which is actually shouted by the dancers. Really, I guess, in a way, as a almost as a lot of Ohad's work is, sort of protesting in some ways often about some of the more constrained aspects of Israeli society at times.
Yeah, because I read articles around Ohad Nahrin today, the New York Times in particular article, they're speaking about him being an outspoken critic of the Israeli government. Another piece, this is a quote from himself, this is from the liberal Tel Aviv newspaper, Haaretz, well-established newspaper. And this is him, these are the words of Ohad Nahrin. "When I say that a cycle of violence did not begin on October the 7th, people call me a maligner of Israel. It's clear to me who the people who are maligning Israel are. They constitute a majority, if not all, of our government. Those who malign Israel are the secular messianic right wing." And it goes on. At another point, he talks about people talk about the Arabs, the Muslims, the Gazans being the other side. There are people in Israel who are more on the other side than many people who live in Gaza. He clearly is not afraid to stand up against what he sees as injustice.
No, he is not. And yet the community here believe that that he backtracks on that, and that indeed he's involved in culture washing and painting the prettier face of Israel.
Yeah, and I think that isn't there an allegation as well that within the dance company, it's mostly there are no Palestinian dancers within his own dance company in Israel.
Within Nederlands Dance Theatre in Holland, there are only two dancers who are Dutch. That is a thing that is a consistent across all dance companies and theatre companies across the world. Yes, indeed. So there are very few. There are so many foreign artists who go expressly to, you know, to work within the, or have done in the past, because of course Ohad retired as artistic director in 2018, so he is no longer the director of the company.
When did you speak to him about the fact that you were going to drop the piece?
We communicated on Wednesday morning with him and let him know, and he was very disappointed and saddened for us too. But it's not something that he is unused to. Obviously, generally speaking, companies like ourselves normally don't suffer any kind of protestation or issues like this. But Sheva, when they have been on tour internationally, would...
Yeah, that's his dance company.
It was his dance company, no longer. But as an Israeli dance company, would sometimes suffer from protests outside theatres, etc. But not normally. For instance, Netherlands Dance Theatre, because the piece is 25 years old now, and they are performing it next week, and there won't be any protests there. But sadly here, as I said, the pressure was unrelenting and coming from within our own community, which was so very sad.
So you made the decision that you're putting that piece to the one side.
I need to look after my dancers and I have a duty of care to them.
Let us talk then about the two pieces that you will be doing, because they are very exciting. In fact, let me bring in Dominic at this point. The two pieces that are involved, the other two pieces of this Bold Moves series, Dominic, one from Felipe Portugal, Portuguese, beautifully confusing, a Portuguese choreographer, and the other from Johan Inger of Netherlands Dance Theatre. The chance to get to dance such contemporary choreography within a company that you know well, because you've worked with Ballet Ireland on many occasions. What does that mean for a dancer?
For me, that was a huge moment. As soon as I heard that was what was happening, I made absolutely sure that I was around for it. It's a name I've always loved his work. He's an absolute genius.
Is this particularly Johan? Specifically
in this instance, Johan. Felipe, obviously, as well. Also, I was lucky enough to dance Felipe's work previously in the Valley Island season 2022. With the introduction then of Johan's piece as well, it was a no-brainer. I was on my way. Flights booked.
It has been an exciting... Because you've done a series of these, Anne's, and taking this very contemporary choreography and putting it into a ballet group like your own. What was the advantage in that, and what were the aims in that? Or what were the aims in that for you?
So curating this Bold Moves series was a very deliberate act to bring... the work of astounding international choreographers to Ireland, not just to be seen on Irish stages, but to actually mount them and present them on Ballet Ireland, so that it was an Irish company and our artists who were performing the work, and it would be within our repertoire. So it was, as I say, you know, a decision to go, OK, we're going to do this series of very contemporary spring seasons, because we feel that we don't get to see this kind of work danced at this level ever in Ireland. And so it was just so important. And for me also, it's so incredibly exciting to hear Dom reflect what exactly I think, which is the opportunity to give my dancers a moment to work with artists of this caliber, because you grow and grow and grow as an artist.
I used the term just before we came to Ireland, I can't remember it now. I was asking you, will either of the choreographers travel to Ireland to put the work on the bodies of the dancers? What is the person who comes?
Stager.
A stager. So this would be a person, I presume, who has worked closely with either or both choreographers.
Absolutely. So in our case, this season, Felipe Portugal, the choreographer himself, was here. So that's such a gift, because he will also reshape and remake certain elements of the work always on the artists in front of him. That's very special. And then secondly, to work with someone like Ivan Dubray, who has known Johan Inger for over 30 years. They were dancers together, they were colleagues, yes. They were friends, and now they work, and he restages a lot of his work. So, and he's the most extraordinarily giving, wonderfully intense, wonderfully just a fabulous human being.
When a dancer has become this stager and is taking somebody else's choreography, when you have been, a choreographer has taught you or worked on a piece with you, Dominic, I guess if you go on to somebody else, you know the pitfalls, you know the bits that you found difficult and the corners that you had to twist and turn through. And that's how you would help a dancer if you were a stager.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing like receiving the information from somebody that's had to put it onto their own body first. Mm. The information is so clear, and it comes from such a place of understanding that it's a process. Like, this is, you know, you can really feel with Ivan that he adores this work. It's something he really wants to like gift to us, and you know, we can feel that in the room. So everybody's just so eager to take whatever he's.
Well, I can see I can see the excitement on your face. I can see even that as Dominic is describing.
It's so exciting, you know.
Johan's work is called Walking Mad. Yeah. Ravel's Bolero. He has people walking mad too. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's absolutely fabulous. It is just so fabulous taking a piece like that and then transforming your perhaps perceptions around that music with this, and the wall. You have to talk about the wall, Sean.
Would you explain the wall to me? Or maybe Dominic, explain the wall.
So the wall is this just beautifully imposing structure. It starts on stage right there, right in front of you. And I guess it could look static for all of 5 seconds until you realise what this wall is capable of. It's completely changing, reforming, bending, opening up.
Is it materials
down,
or is it people?
It's just a huge
structure. It's
that changes.
Wood. And it can lie. It's 10 meters wide. It can fold. It can glide down flat. It can separate. It does extraordinary things. Mm. They climb on top of it. They walk all over it, and they dance in front of it.
All of that done while they're listening to this or dancing to this piece of music. I'll just pick a little bit of Ravel's Bolero in underneath me here. This is where the trombone comes in. Now, Ravel's Bolero starts with just the drums, and it builds over 15, 16 minutes to the whole orchestra being involved in it. Is that reflected in the choreography?
It is, absolutely, of course, yeah. I mean, it comes to this huge crescendo at the end, both in terms of the intensity of the movement and also emotionally, and yeah, it's just spectacular.
We'll just listen to another bit of Ravel. There we go. So that's a little bit from the middle of Ravel's Bolero, which is the piece that is played for Walking Mad, the Johan Inger work that Ballet Ireland are performing in the upcoming Bold Move series. And you were saying, as we were listening to that, Anne, that Ivan, who is the stager for this work, knows every single bar of this piece of music, each instrument as it comes in, which
absolutely,
I guess, leads the choreography.
Because we stand in the studio going, where are we? Because, you know, it is the same theme
repeated over and over.
And yet he knows every moment, every instrument, everything.
Yeah. OK, let us move on then. So that's Walking Mad, and it's got the big wall. We've got to watch out for that particular aspect of things. Tell me a little bit then about the Felipe Portugal piece. Maybe I'll ask you on this one, Dominic, Stepping Over.
Yeah, so it's basically a very, very classical piece. It flies very contrasted to how Walking Mad has just gone. Walking Mad is very intense, very kind of angular and dark, and Stepping Over is just this beautiful, lush, open space. It starts like a lot of light, a lot of shadow, very intimate duets. And then just...
How many dancers are involved in Stepping Over?
16.
And how many, by the way, sorry, in Walking Mad? I should have asked you that too.
Only 9.
So nine is a fairly big...
Feels like 16.
16 in Stepping Over. And it kind of... Are all 16 of you there at any at some point along
there
the way?
Yeah, absolutely. There are points where we're all on stage together, and that's a feeling that's just so beautiful.
It's the music of Philip Glass that's played here. His Tyrol Piano Concerto. Let's have a listen to a little bit of that. Oh yes, let's have a listen to a little bit of the Philip Glass. And just as I'm listening to that, Anne-Marie and Dominic with me in studio this evening ahead of the Bold Moves series from Ballet Ireland, that rising, you know, the scale going up, and then it starts to overlap. I guess the choreography reflects that perfectly, does it?
Absolutely. And he is a master of musicality and of reflecting all of that within the work and the lifts and the intricacy of what he does and how, because you look and you just think, how have they just done that? That is incredible. Because it's so far removed from the very classical kind of pas de deux work that you see, and this is just mind-blowing.
And for Ballet Ireland then, to getting that contemporary aspect into the work, it probably has been there all along, but is this a particular move in that direction, or more of a nod in that direction?
Well, I think, Sean, we have been sort of working and doing and introducing our audiences to more contemporary work and just neoclassical work in general for quite some time now. Really, I guess since about 2012, 2013.
Over a decade, certainly.
Yeah. So, but it's just wonderful to be able to develop it and grow it and produce work of this kind.
Well, listen, they sound like two fabulous pieces, and I can see the excitement on both your faces, as they say, about the simple energy that having these two brilliant choreographers, their work, that it has brought to you. That's Anne Marr, Artistic Director of Ballet Ireland, and Dominic Harrison, who is one of the performers, the Bold Move in the Bold Moves series. It takes place at the O'Reilly Theatre in Belvedere College in Dublin from March the 22nd through until March the 30th, and you can get full details on ballyireland.ie. On a quiet pier on a moonlit night, a police officer and sergeant are looking for an escaped convict, a mastermind by all accounts who makes all the plans for the whole organisation. That last phrase, a quote. The reward for his capture is £100, a considerable sum, especially to the married sergeant. And we are a little bit earlier in the 20th century than £100 might be worth right now. Then along comes a ballad singer. This is The Rising of the Moon, a play by Lady Gregory, and it's now on at Beauty's Cafe Theatre in Dublin, directed by Owen Carrick. It stars Oisin Thompson, Michael Tient, and Molly Whelan. Actually, I meant to check with you, Paula Shields, who went to see it, who's with me in studio now. How do I say Michael's name?
Tien.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Irish,
but there's a French background there somewhere or others. Okay. Lady Gregory doesn't even give these characters name. Man, sergeant and police officer. What sort of characters is she giving us? What kind of story is she telling in this play?
It's a three-hander. One of the first things the Bewley's cast have done is it's gender blind, it's colour blind casting. So that's a very nice 21st century twist, given we are going back to 1907 when this play first came out. A police officer and a sergeant are coming along, and because it's 1907, because we know it's the early part of the 20th century, Ireland is still a British colony. So we immediately understand about these officers of the law that it's the British Crown they're working for.
And the whole organisation that this convict makes his plans for, we probably have a rough idea of what side that organisation might have been
on. Absolutely, and what language they're talking and all of that carry on. And they're talking about this man is some kind of Houdini. Nobody could have made the jailbreak. He could have. And one minute they're talking about the £100 reward and they may get promoted if they catch him. And then the next thing, Molly Whelan, who plays the police officer, says, but if we do catch him, we'll get nothing but abuse on our heads for it from the people and maybe from our own relatives. Mm. So we know it's very made very clear what a complicated situation they're in.
So what's the tone of the story that Lady Gregory is telling it? I mean, it sounds like there's a touch, maybe Keystone Cops is a bit too rough on these, but they're not the best policemen and police people in the world, are they?
No, they're not the most suspicious. That would be a very different play. It's a mix of tension and comedy.
Mm.
So I always say I'm a brilliant audience because I'm completely naive and I never see the twist that's coming. But the police officer goes off to do whatever he has to do and the sergeant is left alone and the next thing along comes a ballad singer. And even I am thinking, OK, we know who this possibly is. And the sergeant asks him who he is. And he says, I'm Jimmy Walsh. And he says, I don't know that name, but he doesn't make the next step. He obviously doesn't realise. Now, of course, the audience is immediately on the side of this ballad singer. And we love the fact that we know more than the actor on stage, Sean.
Oh.
So it's a nice balance because I was even thinking, is there a touch of thriller here? And there's not really, but there is tension. Like at one point, there's a noose in shadow at the back of, projected onto the back of the stage. So you do know there are consequences.
Yeah, things could go terribly
wrong. For taking on the British Empire.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
And The Rising of the Moon, of course, is itself a good old rebel ballad referring back to the time of the United Irishmen, isn't it?
It is, it is. But there's more complex things going on about identity, really, you know. The sympathy in Lady Gregory's writing, so the sympathy for this very charming ballad singer who wants to rebel, who wants to win over the policeman with words, not with a gun. But Lady Gregory really is more interested in the sergeant because the sergeant is all about, that's Michael Tien in this role, he's all about duty and law and order to begin with, and he's quite bossy and slightly angry and very conscious of the fact that he's a married man, so he has financial responsibilities.
So the £100 or his share of the £100 would be well worth getting?
Well, you know, it's not nothing. One can only fantasise about what that would have bought you back in the day. And then the encounter with the ballad singer starts to chip away that veneer. Because the ballad singer starts to sing. First of all, he says, oh, I wouldn't want to meet that fella alone if I were you. And then he starts to sing these songs and he deploys the word maybe like a missile. He'll say, maybe you'd have been a young man singing a song like this. And he draws him in and you start to see a more complicated. And really what she's getting at is what colonialism does to instinctive identity that you grow up with and the choices you have to make.
This is extraordinary. Even as you're describing it to me, it sounds like a full length play, but we're talking 26 minutes of stage time, which is classic Beauties. It's a lunchtime show, effectively a one act play.
Yes, but it doesn't feel like a sketch. It does feel like more than that. I mean, that the relationship between the two men is the crux of the thing. And there are lovely moments within that. There's a lot of singing. Oisin Thompson sings a song about poor old Gráinne Whale. It so happens that Oisin Thompson is from Belfast. So at one point I laughed and thought, well, there's a northerner and there's Gráinne Whale. That's both sides of my DNA ticked right there. But it feels like a full length. You know, you come away feeling like you've seen something substantial.
Yeah, the one act play was such a form, I think, particularly in this kind of early to mid 20th century in Ireland, the one act play. And there's still one act play drama festivals that are very important in terms of the plays that are seen there. Tell me a little bit more. You mentioned Oisin Thompson there, one of the performers. Tell me about the other, because it's a three-hander.
They're all graduates of the Lear Academy, whose most famous graduate is, of course, Paul Mescal. So it's fantastic to see the way that is just slewing out all these very talented actors. And in a way, Molly Whelan has the smallest part. The police officer comes on at the start, and when she comes back at the end, we know, she doesn't, but we know things have turned and that the sergeant is more sympathetic and the ballad singer, of course, is nowhere to be seen at that point. It's a very convincing portrait that she has, but she has less to do in a way. And then Michael Tien has this kind of great physical presence, this great solid. And then you can see him start to get, softer
sergeant,
and quieter and more uncertain. And then, but really Oisin Thompson is the star of the show. And in a way, the role is the star of the show. You know, he's the charming ballad singer and he's got the trickster role.
Yeah. Know? And given that we are in a lunchtime situation here and Owen Carrick directing, how much staging do we get? How much stage setting do we get in this Beauties production?
We get enough and not too much. It's the set and costume designer is a Greek lady by the name of Chrissy Hatsi Vasiliou. And so we get the lobster pots and we get the sound design by, I can't remember, but it to suggest that we're by the sea and the idea that a boat may be coming to rescue the singer, you know, is part and parcel of it. But, you know, the lovely thing about Bewley's is anybody who's been there knows you're up close and personal with the actors. They're running past you. You know, you're in it. You're in the action.
Sound design by Fiona Sheila. I just see it here.
That's
on the,
a bad
on
name the, to forget, isn't it?
Fiona Sheila, exactly that.
Possible cousin.
This isn't the. There's a lot of Lady Gregory going on at the moment. At the Abbey are heading off into a big commemoration of her work, aren't they?
That's right. It's the 120th anniversary of the founding of the Abbey this year. So Katrina McLaughlin and Mark O'Brien have set in play a thing called the Gregory Project. So they've commissioned six of our best known female playwrights to write seven plays. So Marina Carr is getting two bites at the apple. She's got her play, Audrey and Sorrow, or Sorrow is on now on the main stage. But in the autumn, she's got a new play coming as well. And it's just that thing around commemorating Lady Gregory's legacy.
And where do you think the rising of the moon, this play that you have seen this lunch, where does it fit into that legacy? Is it an important piece of work within Gregory's kind of overall mission?
I think it's very typical. You know, she's all about the ordinary people and the ordinary language. Now, some people may think that's a bit patronising coming from Lady Augusta Gregory, but it's a thing that examines perspective. But it's got all of her hallmarks. She knows she's got to entertain people. She's a businesswoman. Like, she ran the Abbey. You know, she's a manager as much as she was an artist. But it's a lovely piece of writing. I mean, it stands as a script in its own right, never mind this production.
So you're recommending it as a nice lunchtime jaunt if you can make your way to Bewley's?
Absolutely.
At that time of the day?
Absolutely. And I love the 26-minute format is the new way forward, I think, because you really can get in and get out and get on with your day afterwards. But, I thought it was very successful.
Paula Shields speaking to us there about The Rising of the Moon. It's at Bewley's Cafe Theatre. It runs there through until the 6th of April. You can find full details on the website, bewleyscafetheatre.com. And so Friday evening, final half hour of the programme, time for this week's look at the new album releases with me in studio, Pat Carty and Louise Bruton. Yes, you can get us on the live stream, rte.ie/arena. Justin Timberlake is gracing every chat show at the moment, promoting his album Everything I Thought It Was, which features 18 songs, including one with his old boy band NSYNC. Kacey Musgraves, Grammy Award winning singer-songwriter who blends country, pop and folk. Her new album is called Deeper Well. And the third album, the last time rockers Black Crowes recorded an album of new songs in studio, was War Paint in 2008. That's 16 years ago, by the way. Well, they've gotten back in the studio, albeit some 16 years later. And I love the title of this, but I do have to give you the title of to have it avert your ears if you're easily offended. Happiness Bastards is the title of the album. Pat Carty and Louise Bruton have been listening to all three. Let us start with Justin. Everything I Thought I Was. I don't know if he thought he was selfish or he thinks he is selfish, but we're going to listen to a track called Selfish to start out.
Every time the phone rings, I hope that it's you on the other side.
There you go. Pat Carty and Louise Bruton. Not a clicking of fingers, not a clapping of hands, not a lit lighter between the two of them at all as they listened to Justin Timberlake there and his track Selfish from his new album Everything I Thought It Was. His first album since 2018. Selfish, the song we just heard, and Drown have already been released as singles. And he embarks on his Forget Tomorrow tour in April. And he's been in the headlines recently thanks to Britney Spears' memoir, which detailed aspects of their relationship that certainly did not reflect well on Timberlake. He had a bit of work to do, Louise, had Justin Timberlake, after his statements and some of his previous albums and allegations that were made against him in recent, I suppose, the last 9 or 10 years, really, isn't it?
Yeah, Justin Timberlake has a bit of work to do to make people think that he's a likable person again. And I don't think that this is the album that's going to change anybody's minds. I am exasperated by the gall of Justin Timberlake and the way that he approaches, I suppose, what he thinks is cool. I feel like he's definitely lost his edge on this album. And the opening track, Memphis, seconds into the song, you are wondering what he's thinking, what his team are thinking.
It's a kind of a confessional, though, that opening song, isn't
it's meant to be a kind of an introspective look of like what it's like to grow up from being famous from the age of 11 and what happens when everybody gives you all the fast cars, all the money, all the drink, everything that you want. Yeah. But he unfortunately proves Britney Spears right in her accusation that he used to always try and make himself seem cooler and better around artists that he thought were much better than he was or much cooler than he was, and he would adopt kind of a black scent, and that's what he did in this song. He sort of adapts
a bit of rapping
this,
and all sorts of things.
Oh yeah, yeah. And is lyrics that, okay? that we couldn't possibly refer to, but yeah. Appalling.
Yeah, and however, within all of that, Pat, are there moments on the album when you kind of go, oh, that's the Justin Timberlake who made people run out onto the floor to dance and who had a legion of fans, let's face it, at one point in time. He's a star.
Yeah, he is. He's a big star. Sold an awful lot of records. Yeah, there is. I mean, I would second Louise there. Memphis is atrocious. The opening thing is awful rubbish. I didn't realise that was him doing the rapping. I thought he had someone else in. But if that's him, that makes it even worse. But there's a couple of songs. Calvin Harris, the Scottish DJ, who I would have thought was, you know, tantamount to some sort of criminal, really, when it comes to music. He's turned
off
up
the fence there, Pat.
Off to The Hague with that man. But he has turned up and he's co-produced a couple of songs here. It's actually just the second and third song, I think. And one is F'ing Up the Disco, let's call it that.
Okay.
And one is No Angels. And they sound good. There's more than a switch of maybe the kind of Rock Your Body vibe from his first album. Bit of Daft Punk maybe in there by way of Nile Rodgers. Those sound good. If I was at, it was at the afters of a wedding or something, Sean, and I'd had a few pints and they came on, yeah, I would loosen me tie and I would get down to the floor.
But it would be the afters of a wedding.
Well, I mean, that's the only time you could probably get me near a floor anyway. But
okay.
Yeah, I would, yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of songs here. He has a song called Infinite Sex, or is it Infinite or Infinity?
Infinity,
I beg your pardon. Infinity sex, which is what happens when he goes to an hotel room.
It better be insured.
That's one of the lyrics. Better be insured when I get you upstairs, type of thing.
So you could understand in 2002 that he had something to prove, having come from the boy band background and having had a far more famous girlfriend, Britney Spears. And he wanted to prove that he was cooler than the music of NSYNC, wanted to prove that he wasn't a squeaky clean. So a lot of his music from his first album, Justified, songs like I Love You, Senorita, a lot of it was about kind of wooing the ladies and succeeding significantly. But now that he's in his 40s, married to an actress who made fame in Seventh Heaven, playing the pastor's daughter.
Jessica Biel.
Jessica
Biel. Yeah.
Seventh Heaven.
She was in Seventh Heaven, She was the bad daughter in Seventh Heaven. He's proving too much of a point that when an adult man has to prove in his 40s that he's getting some, it's just a dire way of proving that you're it.
Yeah, well, Infinity Sex kind of does what it says on the tin. You might have thought that My Favorite Drug would be about something else, but no, it's not. My Favourite Drug, which could be, I suppose, a reference to a person, but I think he's basically saying sex is my favourite drug. That's the deep thought behind that song, Louise Bruton.
Yeah, and then with the album's title, Everything I Thought It Was, you would think that this would be a very soul-seeking album. But
I thought it was going to be everything that I thought a music career was, but no.
But no, no, it's him just still proving a point that he felt that he had to prove when he was 23 years old. And now.
We've been very hard on poor Justin. He gives us 18 songs here, which is unforgivable. One of which is 7 minutes long, one of which is 5 minutes long. Less is more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You could take half an hour away from this and it'd be a better album.
I still have too much.
You know, you would. I mean, we were saying outside, about 40 minutes or 45 minutes, that's plenty. If you can't say it in 40 minutes, you've no reason saying it. You know, you shouldn't be there in the first place.
Oh, I'm sure, Justin, to tell you what, I can last 40 minutes, probably much
infinity,
longer.
Obviously.
Infinity, Stars, not an infinite number coming, I don't think. Pat?
I give it two, as I say. I think there is a few things on this that are all right. It'll sell by the truckload, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because it's a step away from whatever the... I can't remember what the name of the last album was, where he tried to go a bit Indian weird, a bit Bon Iver.
Man of the Woods.
Man of the Woods, there you go. Thanks very much. And so it's a step back to, I suppose, back in that direction of the dance floor, but it's not great, is it?
Yeah, two stars for me too. Great production, but I feel like he's coasting along and he needs to get off.
Yeah, because the little opening section there of My Favourite Drug is great. But, and his voice, the old falsetto voice still works, doesn't it?
It does, until his former bandmate pops on and if track 17, if you make it that long. When NSYNC do reappear, you realise that there were better singers in the band.
Yeah. 18 tracks, 18 tracks. No. Kacey Musgrave, Texas-born singer. Her new album's called Deeper Well. Fifth studio album, offers a track listing of 14 songs. A little bit better mannered is she. Back in 2021, her album Starcrossed was disqualified from all country music categories in the 2022 Grammy Awards, as some of the tracks were considered to be more pop than country. Controversial. Imagine being caught up in that melee. And does Deeper Well suggest a return to the country roots? Let's have a listen to a track called Cardinal. Cardinal, she sings, Kacey Musgrave, on that opening, track from her new album, A Deeper Well. She's singing, and there's something very touching about this, she's singing to John Prine on that opening track, I believe, Louise.
Yeah, so there is a nice running theme in this album where she is very in touch with nature and she's pretty much looking for signs everywhere to tell her what to do in her life. And one of which is she believes that John Prine was sending her a message via a singing bird in the woods, and it was to live your life to the full and cut off all the bad people. So that's, she took that sign and she ran with it the rest of the album. And a very interesting, depending on where you're coming from, thing about this album is a lot of it is focused on the fact that Kacey Musgrave's Saturn is rising. So for anyone who's not familiar, is that Saturn is somewhere when you are born. And
in
when you turn
give
29,
me a shout when you're done, will you?
And when you turn 29, your Saturn rises to the point where it was when you were born. And
or indeed, when you're 58, I suppose the same thing would happen again, wouldn't it?
So big change.
Back to Justin Timberlake again, there, right? Rising late in life. Yeah. On,
so Kacey is perhaps suffering a little bit too much from introspection, whereas Justin Timberlake had none. But she's looking for signs to live life to the fullest.
Yeah, okay. Well, I suppose, you know, she has had, to be fair, the first album, Golden Hour, was all full of love and she was loved up. Then the second album, 2021, Starcrossed, whether she knew it or not, became a divorce album. Mm. So, I mean, maybe she's looking for a way to kind of find herself again, which is perfectly acceptable when you get a few bumps along the way. What's she doing musically here, Pat?
Not an awful lot, to be honest with you. It's kind of...
Kacey.
Well, hold on a second now. I just want to qualify it before I say any of this. I mean, I think she's very good. I think she's made some great records in her time. I love that Cardinal song. I think it sounds a bit like Mamas and Papas crossed with Fleetwood Mac. And there's another one later on whose name I can't remember. Jade Green, which I really liked. But the rest of it, it's just too... it's too samey. It's too sweet. It's a bit too polite. You know, I mean, I know she's got lyrics about, as Louise was saying, about, you know, getting rid of people in her life, dark energy, people who, you know, because she's found this deeper well and all that. Fair enough. Absolutely. She'll sing about anything you like, but I mean, make the songs a bit better.
There are lyrics here that I don't want to be a lonely millionaire.
Yeah, exactly.
Money doesn't buy happiness. Do you know, I'll be by myself for a day or two.
Yeah, give it a go.
I can be a billionaire.
Well, nobody knows.
Divorce lawyer.
Nobody knows where we go when we die. Maybe we'll ride wild horses in the sky. Sure, maybe. I don't know, but it's a bit...
All right.
Moon in June stuff, you know.
If you have received a Jade Green bracelet in recent times, you might want to use some of the lyrics of this song to say a very smulchy thank you. There was the lyric I was waiting for. Like the bracelet that you bought me, I want you on my arm. I'm sorry to be so cynical because, you know, the music here is perfectly nice and the voices and the singing is perfectly nice too, Louise.
Yeah, the lyrics do fall into the naff territory, and that is something that she has she has been a criminal for before. But there is a strangeness to Kacey Musgraves that I think makes her stand out from most of her country peers. She kind of, before many other people in the country music scene would be kind of advocating for LGBTQ rights, she was the one doing it, putting in her lyrics. And she, when she was adapting kind of more of the pop tones on the last album as well, that obviously she faced the repercussions of not getting nominated. But she's almost kind of lost that spark, lost that sheen, lost that strangeness that kind of made her seem more unique. And that pops up only on the song Anime Eyes, which is kind of close to the end. It's a real kaleidoscope of a song. And it's a welcome release when you do hear that, because you're like, oh, Kacey is still there.
Yeah, because it's quite samey across the 14 tracks, apart from one or two moments, really, isn't it?
Pat? There is. I just want to pull up a lyric from Anime Eyes, just that you mentioned it. I don't think it's a bad songwriting, but there is a mention of a love tsunami washing over both our bodies. Just wanted to get that in there, you know, because I thought that was worth mentioning, seeing as we're on her lyrics.
Okay. Is there a star tsunami about to wash
That's
over
very good.
Kacey Musgraves?
That's there very you good. Go. Would you like me to go first?
Yes,
okay.
Please.
How about, you know, as I say, I think she's a real talent. She's proved it before. This isn't great, though. How about 2.5, because it's the middle, because this is the middle of the road. How about that?
Okay. There's about four jokes you tried to
Thanks,
get in
I'm
there.
Trying 2.5.
And what are you saying, Louise?
Yeah, 3 stars for me, but I'm seeing her in April in the Olympia, and she will bring the charm, which will, you know, right, make up for the dross here.
Take points. Take it. But that's, in other words, there's enough in there to kind of hold you, but it's not the top end of her work. Okay, let us move on to the Black Crowes, who have a 10-track album that lasts 37 minutes and 59 seconds. Top of the class for that. Let's hear what it sounds like. Not a single new guitar riff to be heard anywhere within that, but not a single old one there either. Pat Carty, I have a funny feeling that this will be right up your street, this album.
I love this. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, I went to see the Black Crowes for the first time a couple of weeks after my 20th birthday. So I've been going to see them for 30 something years, you know. And I interviewed one of them recently, and it was I was delighted. I had a great time. And I love this. I think it's a great album. But then I like all their records.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had broken up in 2015, I think. And that was supposed to be the end of it.
Two brothers, basically.
Yeah,
at the helm,
irreparable damage done by messing by one brother to the other brother. And the fact that they were back at all, they played here 2 years ago in the Three Arena. It was a great night. And then there was an EP, a covers EP came out last year, I think the year before, called 1972. Of course it was called 1972. And they covered Little Feat and the Rolling Stones. Rod Stewart, of course, they covered all them. And it was all right. But this, I think this is great. Just from the start to finish. As you say, right, there is no wheel reinventing here at all. But sure, when it's this good, you know, it's got real soul, I think. Now, I hear that. Now, we're about to hand over to the lawyer for the prosecution. And we'll see what goes on there.
Who I think may have a different opinion on this.
Don't think Pat can be quite partial in it.
Sorry, I was on the fence there. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have to read a bit from their press release. And it had me chuckling before you even started listening to the album, where it goes, the Black Crowes are biting back with the angst of words left unsaid, penned on paper, and electrified by guitar strings revealing stripped, bare-boned rock and roll. No gloss, no glitter, just rhythm and blues.
Right, and which of them do you think wrote that? Or perhaps was it a publicity person?
Yeah, Chris had a direct line to the publicist. Like, it is, this is, you know, they didn't belong in the time that they initially landed. And the music, this album, the first track, Bedside Manners, it takes you back to a time that not even they were performing in.
Let's get a little blast of it. And I almost feel like, yes, people, you're listening to us on Stereo FM. Bedside Manners from Black Crowes. It really is a blast from the past, that one, Louise, isn't it?
Yeah, like, you know, they, as Pat was saying, they sound happy. They're having a good time.
It's
great to get the band back together.
It's not all like that.
Ah, no, Pat, no, there's very little on it that isn't kind of three-chord rock and roll.
But nothing wrong with that. But they do get in, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but they do get in other stuff.
Oh, yeah. Bleed It Dry, I feel like, is been drop-kicked into a honky-tonk bar.
Yeah, kind of an old bluesy type of thing.
It's like a Rolling Stones fan bar that they were... playing in a tribute band. And then I suppose Flesh Wound borrows a bit more from the Clash's School of Rock. So they do branch out a little bit.
So could you be won over to, I mean, I'm still looking at the 10 songs, 38 minutes, and giving them, you know, certainly a nice report home to Mammy and Daddy about that one.
I mean, you know,
brevity is the soul of wit. Did they manage it?
Did they manage to get the soul? I mean, I mean, they'll be sitting beside each other at Christmas and Thanksgiving. But yeah, there's a kindred friend that closes the album, and that's a nice nod to their brotherly reunion. They'll be pals again.
Stars from you, Louise.
Just a kind of a middling 2.5.
A middling 2.5. Pat Carty, now, now put on your journalist's head.
Well, does it have to be out of five? Does it have to be out of five? Can I not give, like, all the stars in the sky, all the stars in the firmament? No, out I love this. I love this. 4.95 out of five. I think it's great. But I understand that people don't. You know, you said dad rock there when we're on a break. I'm a dad. I've got two kids. What's the problem?
Yeah, turn up.
And
the
I like to rock.
Yeah, and turn up the volume on the car on the way home. Abs-
and pretend I'm 21.
And still travel at the right speed. None,
of no, course. No, yes, if any guards are listening, of course.
No, listen, it's the right time. This is the weekend to be taken care of. So let us any play
weekend,
our music.
So Sean, I would say any weekend. I don't know what.
Absolutely. All right, let us. So 4.95 and 2.5. I think that's a first. 4.95. Black Crowes and their wonderfully titled Happiness Bastards. Deeper Well from Kissy Musgraves. Everything I Thought It Was from Justin Timberlake, Pat Carty and Louise Bruton, our reviewers this evening. We asked you earlier on the name of the 2021 documentary film about Damien Dempsey. Any takers? No. Love Yourself Today is the title of that documentary. Kate Brady is the winner of a competition. We'll be heading off to see Damien Dempsey live at the Marquee and staying at the Metropole Hotel in the heart of Cork City's historic Victorian Quarter. Have a great night there, Katie. That is our lot for tonight here on Arena. Let's have a go and see if I can get everybody who's out in the David Phelan was the broadcast coordinator. Leah Murphy was the researcher this evening. Ruth Kennington was on sound. And tonight's programme was produced by Kay Sheehy. Monday is oh yes, we're resharing some of our Janice Inn, Ralph McTell, Stockton's Wings, stuff from Tradfest earlier in the year. Really hope you get a chance to listen to that on Monday night. Balachtín na féile, Orav Galer, Beg John Creedon, Live in Yig Nanochta.